I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video games industry. We cover the things that have been happening on PCs, in consoles, in mobiles, even. Yeah, imagine that. And also in the industry in general. Announcements. So, well, you know, it's a gaming show. You know what it is. My name is Patrick Beja, and I'm very glad, very happy to be welcoming back. And we were joking before the show, an all new, all different Ed Mitchell. How's it going, Ed?
It's going great, man. I am my triumphant return to Pixels, right?
Well, it's been like, yeah, we were saying 4 months. So yeah. Your entire life has changed almost.
Yeah. So I moved from Raleigh, North Carolina to Austin, Texas, here to kind of, do something different with our lives. I was telling Patrick before the show that it's kind of was a little bit of a dream come true for me. I've been wanting to move here for a while. And after me and my wife got married, we kind of just decided to go out on a limb and do it. So, yeah. And
I'm telling you, if anyone who's still around, you know, between 20s and early 30s, just got married, maybe if there's any time to do something dumb and crazy and fun, it's now. Like, really, I did my share of weird, like, I went to live in Japan. Most listeners probably know this. Went to live in Japan. I moved around. My wife did the same. Best way to not have regrets is to do your crazy things. Of course, you get your degree first. Like, you're a serious person, of course. But then you go and do the crazy things. So I'm glad you're managing to do that.
Both very happy with our new jobs. Better jobs for both of us. So yeah.
Very nice. And also, other crazy thing, you went to PAX West.
But you go every year,
so.
Yeah. It's a kind of a yearly occurrence for me. But I would say that this year was just as cool as the other years. I got to play some cool new games, both some indie games and some AAA games. So.
Well, we're going to get into that. But so we're going to talk about PAX. We're going to talk about the Microsoft All Access, Xbox All Access thing. I think that's an interesting new way of approaching subscriptions for games. We'll talk about that then. There's a 48 minutes gameplay video of Cyberpunk 2077 we're going to talk about. There's some news about Anthem. We're going to go over what's being released in September. Nintendo announced their RPG developed by Cygames. A bunch of things that we're going to go over. But first, as we started discussing, PAX West. So I've been to PAX East once, and it was a fun, small convention with, like, fan-oriented. I'm guessing PAX West probably asked you that same question last year, but PAX West is probably a similar thing. What did you do? What did you see? What's there to of note on that convention floor?
So I played, and I wish I had numbers on my notes here, but I think I played something like 20 games.
Okay.
maybe a little bit more. Just some of the highlights. I played the new Metro game, from the Metro Last Light and Metro 2033, I think, series.
Yep. It was delayed, I think, recently.
It looked amazing, though. It
is
incredibly good looking. I played it on the Xbox, actually, and even on the Xbox was Xbox One X, so it was incredible good looking. The controls were a little sluggish, but I think it was just a sensitivity thing on the control stick versus like the actual controls themselves.
If you're used to playing FPSs on PC, keyboard and mouse, yeah. Then yeah, it's gonna feel a little bit weird. But you get used to it.
So I quite liked it. I really liked 2033, and I haven't played Last Light yet. So there, that's the thing. Next, I played with Spider-Man.
Don't say too much because it's coming out in like just a few days, and I don't want it spoiled. But yeah, your overall
feeling. It is a solid open world game with all the kind of trappings of an open world game. But the combat and the fluidity of the movements as you traverse the city both feel very, 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 very good. So
okay. That's what I want to hear. Like, I don't really expect it to be an incredible, amazing, life-altering game. I just want it to be good and to have some Spider-Manning in it. And apparently that's what it is, right?
Yeah. So just some other quick highlights. I played the new Assassin's Creed game, which has returned to form for the ship combat from Black Flag, which I'm very, very excited for. Darksiders 3 I played. I really like the it's kind of more Metroidvania, kind of closer to Darksiders 1 than Darksiders 2, which is a good thing for me. Go ahead.
I wasn't too sure about that one. They also had a long like 20 minutes gameplay video a couple of months ago maybe. And it felt a little bit like, I don't want to say lazy, but it felt like what it was when it first came out. What was it? Like 6 years ago, 7 years ago? Mm-hmm. And like the world has moved on a little bit, but maybe it's going to be great, but it felt like that, like a game that's a direct continuation of either the first one or the second one. And I'm not sure that's what we want today. Do you confirm this or is it modernized?
I think it definitely rises. It picks itself up because I love the Darksiders series. Mm. So it's, I'm kind of in this wash of being happy that we're even getting another one, considering it was so unsure to happen for the past couple of years. And the fact that you're playing someone who's a little bit more magical instead of physical attacks and stuff like that, I think it's cool and kind of a nice little twist on the combat. And then the traversal and exploration of the world, I think, is solid. So
okay. That sounds like something that will please the Darksiders aficionados, of which there are many, and maybe others will... I mean, I wonder if it's an opportunity to jump into the Darksiders series, but I'm thinking there's too many other things to take time to play a game that is similar to what it was in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first game is almost a must-play for a lot of people, especially if you're a huge fan of the Zelda series. Because it is basically a Zelda game, just with a little bit more, with voice acting and a little bit more tough aesthetic.
Right.
Okay. And then I played Hitman 2, the sequel to the last Hitman game that came out a couple years ago, and that was
a sequel to Hitman. Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah. It's quite good. The mission that you play is you're at a racetrack and you're trying to like basically infiltrate in and then take out some like people that run this robotics company or something like that. But at one point you get to take out a mascot and dress up in a little like pelican or a flamingo mascot costume. So that was cool and fun. Mm-hmm. I like it and I'm looking forward to when it comes out. If you want to, that's kind of the big name games that I played. If you want to hear more about all the other games I played, I think we're recording a podcast for the 4-player people sometime next week.
Cool.
So I'll give my rundown of all of the 25 games that I played or something like that.
So if there's a highlight of the convention, games or just, you know, stuff that happened there, what would you... you know, what would you tell people? This is what PAX West is for me this year.
Yeah, I mean, PAX West is definitely an indie game like treasure trove. There's just so many there. There's the mega booth, which has like 20 to 30 games in it, and then upstairs it's just this gigantic floor of indie games. So
it's the kind of thing where people come with their computer and they have like 6 feet by 6 feet on the corner of the thing, and they're like, yeah, play my game, it's fun.
Yeah, right. So and you, if you go there for the like AAA games, you're gonna be played with long lines and just overall crowdedness. But if you go there for the indie games, you'll have a lot of fun and be able to play a lot of cool things that that haven't been seen or released yet. So
okay, cool. I do want to ask if there's one indie game that surprised or delighted you. Which one would it be? Is there something notable in there or not?
Yeah. There was a game called Shift Quantum, which was it's kind of hard to describe, but it was based off an old Flash game where you would basically convert the floor into the sky and the sky into the floor. So everything that is solid becomes the air, and everything that was air comes solid, and you kind of flip over the map and you kind of traverse through different levels by basically just moving and doing like one single mechanic of switching things. But there's a lot, as you get further and further in the levels, there's a lot more different like mechanics. There's like wind and fans and spikes and things like that. And from me at talking to the developers, they said that there's going to be like 140 levels in it, and it comes out in like a couple weeks, I think.
Okay.
So something to take a look at. That's Shift Quantum.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that report. Let's move on to the Microsoft's Xbox All Access Pass, which is, I mean, it's getting a little bit confusing, but basically what it is a subscription, not just to the online services for Microsoft, but to the console as well. Think of it as a smartphone contract where you buy the smartphone as you're getting the contract with the provider, and you're spreading the cost across 2 years. So this is what it is. You get an Xbox, either S or X. You get the Xbox Live Gold service and the Xbox Game Pass, which Xbox Live Gold allows you to play online. Xbox Game Pass gives you a library of games that you can access and that you can install on your console. And all this for $20 a month if it's an Xbox One S, or $35 a month if it's an Xbox One X. And the thing that is interesting there is that, as I mentioned, you're not paying more for this. So they're not ripping you off kind of with bigger interest rate than if you were to pay out for all of this out of hand. And you're not paying a lot less. I think it comes down roughly to the same cost to paying everything.
It's about the same.
So then the question becomes, why are they doing it? They did it with the Xbox 360. This is in the US only, by the way. They did it with the Xbox 360, but they didn't have the Xbox Game Pass at the time, and it was very confidential. I don't know if this is going to be less confidential. Would you be interested in... I mean, we're kind of not necessarily the people that this is targeted towards, but do you think someone would be interested with the subscription like this?
I think so, if only just because it's a very cheap price per month. Like that's less than what I'm paying now for PlayStation View since all the price increases and stuff like that. So, and you just get so much more out of it. The Xbox Game Pass is continuing to be a greater and greater deal with the new games that are being added to it. They just added the Master Chief Collection, for example, to it, and a couple other things, and the games for gold, the Xbox Live games for gold thing, it's hit or miss, but you can find some real good gems on there. And if you're going to buy an Xbox One anyway, you might as well do this just to kind of spread out your cost over the next 2 years. And I kind of assume that you can like pay it down ahead of time if you wanted to. I don't really see why you would.
Well, since they're not charging you interest, I guess you could, yeah. But and you, it's more. I mean, the thing with anyway doesn't matter. But yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting concept for some people. And if you want to say, well, here are the games you have, and if you want to buy an additional one, a new one that's just coming out, you can, but you don't have to. I think the trick here is that, yes, it's the price of this package combined, but you include in the package gold, which I think most people will get, maybe not most, but a lot of people, and Game Pass, which essentially, I think the whole point of all of this is to get you to sign up for Game Pass for 2 years. Right. And possibly once you're hooked on it, you'll keep the subscription going, not because, you know, you forget to cancel it, but because you actually like it. But yeah, the thing is, you have to remember, this is including Gold and Game Pass. So they're kind of locking you into their ecosystem, which is great because it's a good ecosystem, but it's not just like, let's say, purchasing an Xbox One S, or even X over, you know, immediately, or even if you were to buy it over 2 years, because you have those subscriptions that are included in the price. So you can't stop the subscription. It's baked in. So I think this is the reason why this would be interesting to Microsoft. But I don't think it's a bad thing, but it's not like buying just the naked console.
I really think that if you don't have a lot of games for the Xbox and you're looking to get one, then I think that this is a great deal because Game Pass is just continuously improving over the years.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people understand that you don't have to play the latest game the moment it comes out. Mm-hmm. I mean, three months later, it's already $20 off, $30 off.
Sea of Thieves is on there, and that came out a couple months ago, right?
So, but that's a first party. So yeah, that's also the case. All the first party games will be on this service as well. So all of Microsoft's games will be included. Those latest games will be included. But you know, there's groups that call themselves patient gamers. And seriously, you can save so much money by just not spending
the full $60.
The moment it comes out.
For sure.
So even for in that context, playing the games from last year, you can get some super cheap deals, and with this subscription type thing, it can be pretty interesting for some people. I think for us, it's really not that interesting. We're just gonna buy the console outright and deal with that. But for some people, it will be. Mm-hmm. Some more news. Cyberpunk 2077 had almost 50 minutes of gameplay video released a few days ago, I think last week. And I don't know.
Oh, you didn't feel good about it, huh?
It's not that I don't feel good about it, but I kind of feel like it's not as different from everything we've had in the past as I thought it was going to be. It felt to me like Deus Ex, essentially, with a little bit of a more edgy, like, cyberpunk, which is, you know, very well transcribed. The universe is very well transcribed, as expected. But the gameplay felt a little bit like a variation on the immersive sims like Deus Ex. So yeah. I think I'm less sold on the game after having seen that gameplay video than I was before, you know, when I saw the trailer. Because it's all the same, you know, concepts that we've had for a long time, which is, you know, you can choose how you approach each mission and people will remember what you do. And maybe there's going to be, a paradigm shift in that aspect of game design, which will make it more interesting. And certainly I'm not trying to say, you know, this is disappointing because it's less than what it was supposed to be, I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy this very, very much. It's just that I had built it up maybe to be something a little bit more.
So I think the kind of biggest difference for me between this and Deus Ex is the fact that it's open world, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, the technical achievement of turning a game like Deus Ex with the format of Deus Ex into an open world game is enough for me to be, like, sold on it. And
really?
Yeah, it is. And the other thing that I kind of, another reason why I'm pretty much sold on it is CD Projekt and the amount of love and care that they put into the Witcher series.
Mm.
Being able to take those writers and how much time and energy they devoted to their side missions and hunts and stuff like that in Witcher 3, and turn that into a completely different world with their its own like kind of political stressors and stuff like that is very fascinating.
I think maybe that plays into it. The Witcher never grabbed me, including the Witcher 3, which I played for a few hours, and I know this is blasphemy, but I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. It's great.
No,
it's okay.
I mean, but there's different structure, different folks, right? So, like, I think that the Witcher series was one of my favorite games that year.
Right. Yeah. So, of course, you're going to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. So, okay. That was a thing. There are games coming out, like actual games coming out in September. Dragon Quest XI is already out. Destiny 2 Forsaken is coming out today as well. Spider-Man is coming out in a few days at the end of the week as we're recording this. And at the end of next week, Shadow of the Tomb Raider is coming out as well. And that's the big titles for September. There are more, obviously. When is Two Point Hospital coming out? Maybe it's next year. Maybe I'm mistaken.
What is that game?
Is it released? August 30th. Yeah, August 30th, so there's also 2.0. It's kind of a spiritual successor to Theme Hospital, and a lot of people are extremely excited about it. So there's that as well, but technically it's not a September release. I actually got Dragon Quest XI yesterday a little bit in advance because my local store was selling it, and I was like,
nice.
I don't have time to play any of this, but heck, why not? So I played a few hours of that, and I can talk about that for a minute. But any one specifically that you're more excited about out of those?
I have Dragon Quest XI, and I'm preloading it after we get off this call, so I'll play it probably this afternoon, maybe
very
a little
nice.
Bit, and then I'm streaming it tomorrow. So I'm really into that. Obviously, I talked about Spider-Man already. Gonna get that for sure. And then Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I'm gonna try my hardest to try and like kind of rush my way through Rise of the Tomb Raider. So I'll play that. I really thought that the controls in combat and progression of the first Tomb Raider game was very solid, and so
it's funny. Yeah, I loved the first one, and I've tried to get into the second one maybe three times, and every time I wouldn't say I got bored, but at the same time something else pulled me away, but I let that something else pull me away. So I'm not sure I'm going to jump into Shadow of the Tomb Raider, although it's coming out just late enough. I mean, early enough in September that it's not going to bump into stuff in October. So I don't know. We'll see. Spider-Man we talked about. Destiny 2. Man, I want to get into Forsaken so much, but they are making me pay for the expansions from Destiny 2 year one if I want to get into the expansion for Destiny 2 Forsaken. And I do not want to do that. because I was disappointed in the end game of the Destiny 2, as I've said many times. And I know that they're going to drop that requirement the moment they drop some additional expansions for Destiny 2, at which point I will have kind of missed out on the beginning hype of the game. So, like, I don't want to pay $40 for the expansion, plus another $40 or $30, whatever it is now, for the year one expansions, which I'm not going to play. You know, there isn't even any single player content. You could do it, but you're not going to. It's like a new expansion in an MMO. You go straight to the new thing. So I don't know. I don't think I'm going to get into it. And it makes me so sad because I love Destiny 1 so much. And to be honest, I've played, I think, 80 hours of Destiny 2? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Sad. But that's my status for Destiny 2. And Dragon Quest XI. So, I played a few hours. I'm really still in the beginning. And I am I'm charmed by the game, I think is a good way of putting it. I don't think it's the best thing I've ever done, but it's definitely a Japanese RPG, right? It's a JRPG, completely, like, the structure, the gameplay, the combat, the narrative, JRPG from beginning to end. But for some reason, it kind of works here, where usually the other ones, like Final Fantasy 15, I could not get into it. And I don't know why, it just didn't grab me. This one, I think it feels like a children's story. And let me backtrack for a second. Dragon Quest XI came out in Japan a few months ago, and it didn't have any voiceovers. So for the Western release of the game, they added voiceover in English, and they changed a few things. You can go faster on the overworld map, so it's a little bit less of a slug to get through. And they changed a couple of things like this. But Dragon Quest, at its core, is a game that strokes the nostalgia of Japanese people who were school children when the first ones came out. So they kind of recreate that comfortable, similar, almost unchanged, slightly touched up type of gameplay and storytelling for those people. And I think it was the Kotaku review, like they did a 30 minutes review of the game, where the reviewer, who's a fan and who knows Japan and who's been there, essentially says, you know, people play Dragon Quest to remind themselves of that, and they play like an hour in the evening. It's not people who play that game 20 hours straight for 5 days and they've finished it. You know, I mean, obviously a lot of people do that, but most people do it in that slow pace. And the way he put it, I don't know how accurate it is, but it sounds definitely like it would make sense. And the way he put it put me in a different frame of mind to get into the game and really to receive it as an enjoyable, like, light story. And so the voiceover, the English voiceover, or American, I should say, although they have different accents, so English language voiceover, is very much Saturday morning cartoon, which usually puts me off completely. But it's high quality enough that I kind of receive it as a story that is designed for children. And if you have those expectations set, you can enjoy it for what it is. Like, I could absolutely see myself playing this game or this kind of game with my son a few years from now. It's super safe, super cutesy, and like you have the when they talk about like criminals, they're like, oh, the thieves must be terrible. The king sent his whole Kingsguard to chase them. I sure hope they're gonna catch them soon because I'm really scared. You know, it's like, that's the kind of feeling you get. And so it's still extremely early, but for that, I'm kind of enjoying it. And the pleasure of getting to experience a Dragon Quest game. It's my first Dragon Quest game for a number of reasons. And you absolutely find so many things that have influenced Japanese pop culture and our pop culture as well, but Japanese pop culture in particular, that you see the origins of in that game that is a continuation of that legendary series. So I don't think it's a game for everyone, but I think if that kind of description appeals to you, it might be worth getting as a slow burn that you're going to play, you know, a few hours here and there between the big releases of the fall. And for that, I'm really enjoying it. So, yeah, that's what it is for me. So you said it's pre-downloading now. Have you played other Dragon Quest games, or why did you decide to get this one?
I played about third of seven on the 3DS when it came out and got re-released on there. And then I played a decent amount of eight as well. So the main reason I haven't finished either of them is just
because they're 1500 hours long.
Exactly. They're super long. And I mean, eight is universally praised as one of the best ones in the series. So I'm just kind of excited to turn that into a huge, like, full-fledged RPG on a console versus handheld.
Yeah,
I mean, they came out on consoles before that, but they were all the ones that are out right now for handhelds are remakes of the old ones. So this is kind of the first modern Dragon Quest game, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because in between you had like Dragon Quest Builders and Heroes, and I played Heroes, and the MMOs and stuff like that. So I suspect. You're going to have a good time with this one, more of a good time than you did with the other ones, because even though they're remakes, I think they still bear the weight of the time when they were designed.
Right.
So, Dragon Quest XI. I haven't been grabbed by a JRPG for so long. I was expecting this one to not grab me either, but it's kind of cute. I'm enjoying it. I did want to mention Destiny 2 is a PlayStation Plus game for this September, but of course it's Destiny 2 without any of the expansions. So it feels a bit dirty to be doing this. It's really more like a demo almost. Like you're going to play through the single player experience and reach max level, and then you can do some of the things at max level, but really where, you know, the fun is at the max level that is like three expansions later. So I did want to mention this for people who are contemplating playing it. I mean, it's free on PlayStation, not free. It's PlayStation Plus, so if you have it, you have it, but still. Hey, Nintendo is doing a JRPG on mobile. It's not developed by them, but they're publishing it. It's called Dragalia Lost. And did you see the Nintendo Direct for that game?
Yeah, I did. It looked pretty interesting. I have some real trouble playing games on my phone. I always find myself being distracted by Reddit or something like that. But I take the bus to and from work. So right now I've been playing Into the Breach on the bus? Switch.
What are you, some kind of socialist?
I know, right?
The bus in the US. I'm shocked. So you can play Dragalia Lost on the bus.
Right.
You know, the game looks pretty for a mobile game. It looks super classical. I don't know. I mean, if you would put the definition of, you know, enter classical JRPG definition and you would have a picture of a million different games because they all look the same, including this one.
Yeah, especially on mobile, like it reminds me of a lot of like kind of the Final Fantasy games on mobile. Just the art style.
They have like the super deformed SD style like cutesy thing, and you have the knight, and like they have archetypes that are we all, you know, we have archetypes in Western culture as well, but in Japanese culture, it's way more strict, way more defined. So they have all of those. Mm-hmm. What really bothers me, though, is that it looks like, you know, Miyamoto went out and said, you know, the premium model is still a priority for Nintendo. And we understand, you know, that we want to develop games that are not free to play. And we want you to pay for one price and that's it. So even though he said Super Mario Run was too expensive when it launched, which it was, they still want to do that. And then, again, I understand they are publishing it and not developing it, but Dragalia Lost feels like every other free-to-play game on the planet. Like, mm-hmm. they have rarities of heroes, they have elemental attacks, they have strengths for different parts of the game. Like, I can't remember if it was individual spells that had different strengths, but... Like, the heroes have a different star rating, and the higher you have the star rating, the higher, the more powerful your hero is, and you can right. improve their abilities and their spells, and it just feels like it's going to be I don't want to say pay to win, but either a incredible grind fest, or, you know, just paid to unlock the things.
Yeah.
So I'm interested because it's Nintendo. That's what I said in a tweet. But if it was anyone other than Nintendo, I would not even have looked at that game. Hey, Battlefield 5 is delayed. Apparently it was tracking very poorly on pre-orders. Which yeah. I can understand, but it was stuck between Call of Duty and Red Dead Redemption 2, and they're delaying it to November. With that news, they lost value on the stock market, because the stock market is dumb and doesn't understand what's happening in this industry. I mean, obviously, if they're delaying it, it's that they were feeling the pressure of the releases they were close to. I understand November is too late for most games most of the time, but surely this is better than coming out in October. I guess maybe the you know
yeah.
the stock market was reacting to the fact that it's disappointing and that they had to move it to November, so it's not going to do as well as they would have hoped initially. But I don't know that there's a lot to say about this. But
I think EA kind of learned a little bit from the release of Titanfall 2, you know, where they put it kind of right yeah. in the middle of Black Ops and another game that was coming out around that same time. And so the fact that they delayed it is not, obviously investors are dumb and don't understand like the complicated nature of releasing a game on time or not doing that. But I think this is nothing but positive for Battlefield, because I mean, no matter what, I think the hardcores are going to buy it no matter what. So putting yeah. it outside of the window of Call of Duty allows you to get more of the not hardcores to purchase. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what it means is that it was in a really tough spot at that mm-hmm. point. And you can track right. that by pre-orders. It's a good indicator of how popular your game is going to be, how many pre-orders you get. And they mentioned it was tracking lower, significantly lower than previous episodes of the game. So it was in a hole, and maybe by putting it in November, they're digging it out of the hole a little bit, but it might not be as successful as they had initially hoped before they even, you know, decided on the release date. So I understand why the market is reacting like this. And I understand that EA is being clever, and as you mentioned, probably learned their lesson what was the name you just...
Titanfall 2.
Titanfall 2, yes, of course. From Respawn. But yeah, it's still... I think in November it's going to have a little bit more space to breathe, which every game is going to need this whole season. And by the way, Assassin's Creed is skipping 2019. So Ubisoft confirmed they're not necessarily back to the yearly schedule for the game. I think if I would guess about their new strategy is develop a new, not necessarily engine, but a new framework for a game, put out a game, put out not a sequel, but a game that uses the same assets and
right.
You can convert some of the work that you've done on the first one and then skip a year and repeat that. So 2 out of 3 years, you will have an Assassin's Creed. I think that would be, I don't know if it makes sense business-wise, I have no idea, but I think it would be a good compromise because a new game every year we know is not necessarily viable creativity-wise. But if you have a new game and then a riff on that game, which the people who enjoyed it can get back into and it still gives them something to put out on that alternate year, then it's acceptable, I think, to the gamer cult, like common consciousness. And then you skip one and then you come back on the third year with a completely new one and people are interested again. I think that's a pretty good formula.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually was a little surprised that they, when they announced that Odyssey would come out this year, because I thought they were kind of not going to do it every year. But the fact that they're not doing it next year kind of alleviates a lot of my concerns there. So
yeah. It's a good move. I hope they keep doing that. Hey, did you play Subnautica?
I played a little bit of it, but I never finished it. But I mean, everyone was praising it on 4-player. So
everyone's raving about it. I kind of feel, and I have a PlayStation VR, so I kind of have a feeling that I should get it at some point.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it, but it's coming out with an expansion, and the expansion is a standalone expansion. So you can get it. You can get it even if you don't have the original game. It's one of the games I think I'm going to have to get back to at some point.
Yeah, so, no, I agree.
Yeah. It's one of the best games. I think I'm going to have to play it at some point to be able to judge 2018 correctly because it's definitely one of the games that has been making a lot of noise. Did you like Onimusha? Do you remember Onimusha?
No, I don't remember at all.
That's funny. It was a game that came out, a Capcom game, that came out at a time when Capcom was riding Resident Evil's hype very high. And it was kind of a, I don't want to say, it wasn't a Resident Evil in medieval Japan, but it kind of was. Like, it was the kind of thing people were hoping to get, but it's much more action-oriented. And and the fact that it's coming out as a... Oh, that's what this news is about, by the way. Sorry. It's not even a remake. It's basically a re-release or a remake for the PlayStation 4, PC, Switch, and Xbox One. Makes me and everyone else think, ooh... Maybe there's Onimusha 3 in the air somewhere. So that, I mean, obviously you didn't even remember the first one, so you don't care. But some people are excited about that. Streets of Rage 4 is coming, which... Yeah, so Windjammers 2 is coming, thanks to a French company, by the way. It's very... The Windjammers community, if you don't even know what that is, it's a Neo Geo game. It is Neo Geo, right? Windjammers, I think.
I have no idea.
You don't know either? Maybe that's a French thing. Windjammers is a competitive tennis/beach volleyball, but with frisbees.
Okay.
And it's a game that was not even super hugely popular back in its day. It was arcade and Neo Geo. That's what it was. And for some reason, people in France love it and have kept it alive. And so now, thanks to that love, Windjammers 2 is coming out. And kind of in the same spirit, Streets of Rage 4 is coming out as well at some point. I can't remember when, but it just got announced with a fantastically retro animation, but really badass looking trailer, which I encourage you to go check out. But the thing is, when you see the game itself, it's super pretty, like well drawn and everything. But it is a beat them up, beat them all, beat them up. What we called them, beat them up at the time, or beat them all. I can't remember.
Beat 'em up, yeah.
Beat 'em up, type of game. So I'm curious, you know, to see if they can manage to put a modern spin on it. It's developed by Lizard Cube, which made the Dragon's Trap, Wonder Boy 3, the
Yeah.
Dragon's Trap remake, which, you know, there was a weird period a couple of years ago where, or was it last year, when all the Wonder Boy games came out again.
Yeah.
And so the good one was made by those guys. So I don't even know what to think about those, but they're gonna be here. I guess we'll find out. Amazon Studios is announcing the Grand Tour game. If you don't know what the Grand Tour is, I didn't either. It's a TV show on
Oh,
the
you didn't know about
Amazon
this?
Studio. The what?
It's Top Gear.
Yeah. Oh, is it Top
It's
Gear? Like the.
Top Gear.
Is it like literally Top Gear, or is it
Yes.
a
It
different.
is literally the people that made Top Gear.
Oh, okay. So that's why it's notable.
Yeah.
I suspect the game is not going to be notable, though.
Yeah, probably not. But I mean, it people that really love driving games, they probably will pick it up to kind of see how it's different, so.
Well, if that is what happens, it can be interesting. I think what's going to happen is people who really love the Grand Tour are going to pick it up, and
Yeah,
it's going to be
sure.
disappointing. And that kind of worries me for Amazon Studios, because they are building a big, a big
Yeah.
development team, and we were kind of hoping that it would be making interesting games. And the fact that they're just developing a game branded on one of their shows, even if it's Top Gear or the Grand Tour, makes me think, like, we haven't heard anything from them, and it's been 3 years. Or maybe there was, oh, this one game, this like esports, we love esports. This is going to be an esports game, which now folded. And that's it. So I'm wondering what they're doing there. Jade Raymond is there, isn't she? I think she's there. So anyway, I'm Amazon Studios, do stuff. You have money, you have talent. What are you doing? Do you play Battle for Azeroth?
Of course, I played Battle for Azeroth. Come on.
Well, you and many, many other people. I was honestly surprised that this was the case. Battle for Azeroth is, by just a little bit, but still, the fastest selling WoW expansion ever. Ever.
Yeah.
Like, it sold better in 24 hours. That's why it's the fastest. But that's the. I remember when I was working at Blizzard, we would, you know, write the press releases on how many games you sell within 24 hours. So, tiny caveat, of course, once again, you had stuff that you would get in the game if you pre-ordered the next expansion, and maybe arguably a little bit more this time around than before, but I wouldn't even say so, because I think last time you could play the Demon Hunter, which is a new class, so has
Yeah,
a
you
lot
could.
of, yeah, you could. So there you go. So there was even a higher draw to getting the expansion last time than there was this time, because the new race you can play in this one, you could play in this one before the
The new
expansion
races,
actually
all four of
launched.
them.
Yeah. So it's not even that big of a draw to buy this expansion. It wasn't that big of a draw to buy the expansion this time. And it sold 3.4 million within the first 24 hours, which is higher than the previous record, which was 3.3 million, which was held, I think, by maybe Wrath of the Lich King and Warlords of Draenor. So both of them were had made the same number of sales within the first 24 hours, and this one did a little bit more. What the hell is happening? Like, I used to work for Blizzard. I am a huge fan of this game. I can't even comprehend that this is still as popular as it is today. I don't understand.
I mean, I would say, I mean, they really did a big push for like a marketing push for it, but it's also coming off the tail of Legion, which is pretty universally praised in the media and people like yourself and I that talk about it, and the just if you just look at the image in the that you're given for Battle for Azeroth, the orc and the human kind of looking at each other or whatever, like that very harkens back to like old school Warcraft as well. And so I think there's just so many elements of the game that kind of hit people in the right spots, hit different kinds of people in the right spots that made it appealing to people. So
yeah, I think there's some nostalgia, but there's been some nostalgia basically since the beginning of the WoW expansions, maybe arguably excluding the very first one, which, you know, the Burning Legion was maybe a little bit alien, even though it was coming from the sources of the original Warcraft games. But after that, you had Wrath of the Lich King, which was like, yeah, this is the nostalgia of the Lich King era of Warcraft 4, of Warcraft 3. And then the Pandaria, was it at that point Pandaria? Cataclysm was like remaking the world. And then Pandaria was a little bit of an aside, which I think underrated as we know. But you know, then it was Warlords and then Legion. And then all of these have a claim to being the nostalgic feeling. And yes, this one as well, they kind of wave that banner every expansion. Right. And I guess another factor is how the quote-unquote controversy, the narrative controversy of the conflict being incited by some unsavory actions by some of the leaders, which made social media explode in anger and arguments. Maybe that was, you know, part of it as people were reminded that the game existed. I don't know. I guess it's a little bit of all of it, but fastest selling expansion ever. That is,
it's cool.
That's one press release I did not expect to to be reading. Very surprising. Aside from that, Blizzard and 2K are removing loot boxes in some of their games in Belgium, as we reported on this show and everywhere. And everyone reported on everywhere. Belgium has prohibited the use of loot boxes. So Blizzard has removed them from Overwatch and Heroes of the Storm. And just like 2K, they've stated, you know, we disagree with the decision, but we are cooperating with the authorities and obviously doing things that should be legally done. There's one notable not mention on the Blizzard side, and that's Hearthstone.
Yeah,
sure, it's free to play, and sure, the game can't work without, doesn't have a business model with loot boxes, even though, you know, in Overwatch and Heroes of the Storm, they're still available when you play the game and accumulate currency or whatever, get loot boxes within the game.
Right.
You just can't buy them with real money in Hearthstone. If you can't spend any real money at all, then, I mean, in Heroes of the Storm, you can spend money to buy other things. In Overwatch, you pay for the game, even though it's very cheap now. And it's only the small territory of Belgium. So it's still manageable. For Hearthstone, I guess the game doesn't make sense. You would have to just, I don't know, forbid, you know, stop the sales, or not the sales, the availability in that region. I don't know. But they don't mention it. And it has essentially what is loot boxes, which go, fit the definition, I think, that the Belgian authority gave. So what's happening there? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if, like, is it really just the fact that, like, it already it's like its only monetization strategy?
Like, I don't think Belgium would care.
Yeah.
Because if that's the case, then, you know, all you need to do is not sell anything else and make the game free, and then you're good. I don't know. I mean, and no one seems to have asked the question to Blizzard. And I feel weird calling my former colleagues and asking that question, so I'm not going to do it. But I think that's, you know, if you're being a journalist, I think that's what you do. You call them up and you're like, hey, so what's happening there? What's the deal? And they might give you the runaround and not want to answer your question. But yeah, I'm curious about that one. And other legal stuff. The EU has adopted the in-game purchases label, which is going to be on boxes, which as we, I mean, better than nothing, but as we mentioned when they decided to do it, it doesn't differentiate between loot boxes and any other kind of DLC, which, again, I'm very much not against loot boxes in most cases, as I've mentioned on the show, getting some amount of anger from some of the listeners. But if you're going to do some labeling, I think you have to be more precise than just, hey, there's in-game purchases, because essentially every single game on the planet is going to be having in-game purchases. With very few exceptions, you always have some kind of additional content that you can get. So even in the indie scene, usually if a game is successful, you want to give more to your customers. And even when it's good content, even when everyone agrees this is awesome that you can get it as DLC and it doesn't, you know, feel like they're nickel and diming you, then it's DLC. So that label really doesn't mean much. I guess it kind of provides a safe way. Like, if you don't have the label, then the parents can buy it for the kids and think, yeah, this is the game and that's all you get, and you can't pester me afterwards to buy the additional character or new continent or whatever. But it's really, I see very few use cases for that label. We need more granular descriptions.
Right.
Did you see that stream convention for Star Citizen?
Yeah, I heard about the controversy of it.
So they wanted to get to make people pay to view the stream for their convention? Yeah. How does strike you?
I mean, Blizzard does it, right?
Right? Exactly. I was like, I read this and I was like, oh, how dare they? And then I was like, oh, wait, BlizzCon. But you know what the difference is? Well, I mean, obviously,
Blizzard's an established company with multiple established IPs that have released actual games to completion.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, you're going to get some, hopefully some news or announcement, or there are a ton of panels that are interesting. And maybe there are going to be it's the argument there. They do panels and it's expensive, and it's, you know, if you want to do it right, then you get people to pay for the convention to be all it can be. And I think the argument stands. If the game had been released, if they hadn't been, we were talking about nickel and diming just a moment ago, if they hadn't been nickel and diming their fans, they're willing fans, that's fine. But it really feels like when those fans that have been nickel and dimed willingly and happily for many of them, when even those fans start saying, dude, now you're pushing it, that's too much, then you realize you're doing something wrong. And they did. And so they backed away. So I think at some point it's like, dude, just freaking release something. Release a game and then start adding additional, even more ways of asking people for their money. So I think that's where the disconnect is, where the difference is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. How do you feel about Star Citizen these days?
I mean, it's cool. It's not really my thing, but I have plenty of friends that have played it and like it. But just the fact that it's taking like years and years and years to develop and finish and
when
stuff
was it,
like that.
When was it funded? I'm gonna
years
look
ago
it up. It's at least 5 years, but
it's originally planned for a 2014 release. Development of the game began in 2011. It's 2018 now.
2011.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Was it? Wait. The development started in 2011. Was the funding in 2011?
It was a Kickstarter, right?
I don't know if the development started before the Kickstarter. No, so the completion of the Kickstarter was 2013.
Okay.
So they did the Kickstarter 2013, most successful Kickstarter in history. The game had already been in development for a couple of years. I mean, given the increased scope of the games now, it's not... I mean, 7 years is still a long time, no matter what. And the most infuriating thing is that they're not anywhere close to a release, it seems. So,
right.
I don't know. It's just definitely that convention pay for streaming thing was a couple of bridges too far for everyone. China is apparently not happy with games. Not only have they not approved any new games since March, they have just released new rules for games trying to curb the usage. Their argument is that it decreases eyesight. It creates eyesight issues. And it couldn't be more transparent that they're trying not to get, like, they're curbing game usage. I'm not sure why. I'm guessing it would have to do with, I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. I could, but I'm not going to. But that's beyond the reasons. I think it's a big problem for some developers because the Chinese market is enormous, as we well know.
So, like, how does this work on mobile? Like, do you have to get it approved by China and then by the App Store, basically? Or
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
They have such a tight control over the App Store, and they tell Google and Apple what to take out of the App Store.
Right.
I don't know if it's as stringent on mobile, but I would guess it is. But essentially, you have to submit your game to two separate agencies, and one of them is currently was being reorganized, so no one approved anything. But you have to submit your game to two separate agencies, and both have to approve it in order for you to be able to put it out in a store, obviously digital store. And you have to have a Chinese company partner, and it's always been very difficult. But yeah, this is an interesting development, especially because, as I mentioned, it's a huge market and it's a big part of many companies' revenue. I mean, it's not threatening or anything, but it's a chunk taken out if that starts to dwindle. And I can't imagine that China is gonna disallow video games.
Yeah. Especially since they went through all that trouble a couple of years ago and allowed consoles in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know? So, like, it seems like it just kind of changes with the wind, which is a shame.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you have a totalitarian regime, which is what it is. What else? All right, let's just finish off with this one, which I'm not going to spend too much time on, but Riot Games has been embroiled in a controversy about sexist and toxic workplace for the past few weeks. There was a report from Kotaku, I believe, right? What was the name of the journalist? I can't remember. I'll find it. Cecilia D'Anastasio. There you go. She spoke to a couple dozen people. This is serious investigative work, and it might be only part of the picture, but it's certainly not an inaccurate part of the picture. She was doing her job, and there was a lot of people that came out confirming what she was describing, which was essentially a very toxic male dominated in a male gamer dominated sense, where people had to prove that they were real core gamer and real core gamers play these kinds of games. Like, it was a bias that instills itself in a culture where you don't have diversity and you assume that everything is a certain way. And that leads you, when things open up a little bit, to discovering that, oh, maybe we were a little bit harsh on some in some aspects. So Riot dismissed that for a while and sort of argued with the reporter and with some of the reports. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, they have a super strong initiative to curb these issues actively within the company. So it might be PR. I mean, some people are going to say, oh, they caved to the social justice warriors, whatever. Sure, you can, you know, I'm sure some people will think that, do that if you want to. It really seems that anyone reasonable would conclude that there was indeed an issue and that that issue needs fixing. And they are actively trying to fix it. And there are, so I don't want to talk about that part too much, but there were a couple of tweets that really made me think about. I mean, that were great illustrations of the issues there. One is explaining why you can't just decide, let's hire this, you know, let's just treat everyone equally now, and that fixes everything. It was Chris Pollock, who's a basically a League of Legends and Overwatch caster and player, who gave that analogy, which I think is very apt. It's he says, it's like having two people in a race and hitting one repeatedly with a hammer. Then it becomes obvious that it's unfair, so you stop the hammering. But the hammered person is already injured, so the race is still not fair, and there needs to be healing before it is. And I think that's a very apt description of why you can't just say, all right, now everything is going to be the same. There was a seminar at PAX where Riot says this is women's only, women only for the earlier part of the day. And there were some panels that people couldn't go to, that men couldn't go to because it was women only. And then after the rest of the day, it was everyone everyone could go there. And the thing is, I understand why it feels unfair. It feels a little bit unfair to the men, and they're like, oh, but I don't have the same chances. This is reverse sexism, whatever. I understand why you feel that way. But at the same time, saying, oh, but just leave, let everyone go there, and so everyone's equal, it doesn't really work that way because women have been treated differently for so long that it leaves effects, you know, women don't apply unless to a job. There was another example. Women don't apply to a job, or more women apply to the job, or women do apply to the job if it's woman only. And that's another tweet that I wanted to highlight by Morello, which is a design lead at Riot. He says, taking the extra time to find qualified candidates who aren't in the process now is valuable. We're not going to be hiring unqualified people just because they're women. We're not stealing a seat at the interview table for you. And he goes into a number of different explanations of this, but he's like, if you say, if you put out a job application or a job offer for a design position, whatever, some women are just not going to apply, or there's you're only going to get few of the applications. But if you say this is women only, and that's the example he gets, you get 400 applications. And in those 400, you might find really good talent that you wouldn't have found otherwise. So having a few of those places where it's, you know, whatever it is, women only, women favored, whatever it is, allows you, even from a capitalistic business-oriented point of view, allows you to seek and find the talent that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And it doesn't mean that the other people don't, you know, it's not like all of a sudden Riot is going to get all of their job offers women only, right? It's going to be a few here and there.
Yeah.
So you still have an opportunity if you're not a woman to apply, and if you're a woman also to apply. But those two explanations, I think, made it quite clear why you can't just make it, okay, now everyone's equal. There's healing that needs to happen before you can make it everyone's equal. And the effect of the preferential treatment that you've had for dozens, hundreds of years doesn't disappear in 1 second because you say, okay, now everyone's equal. So anyway, that's something I wanted to point out.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I have to add to this is the article that that woman wrote about the sexism in Riot is incredibly long, incredibly detailed, and kind of goes to show that there is something wrong at Riot, and that needs to be fixed, because a lot of the stuff that is particularly mentioned, like with specific examples, was pretty gross stuff. So
yeah, and it's good that, you know, this is the process, you, and that's why the press is important, and why, yep. Oh, by the way, since we're on the topic, there was some mini controversy about the Spider-Man press tour for influencers and YouTubers. I don't know if you heard about this in the US, but in France, It was kind of like, oh, so they're being taken first class and, you know, first class flight, luxury hotel, helicopter tour in New York. And it was like, first of all, I'm disappointed that Sony is doing these kinds of press tours, but it's for YouTubers, so what are you going to do? They're not really journalists, or don't claim to be, but at the same time, this is very not really ethical kind of treatment.
Right. And
the reason I wanted to mention it is that, of course, Gamergate is nowhere to be seen on this. They don't care. It's a serious ethical question about in game journalism and their beloved YouTubers, which I also love. But of course, there's no social justice warrior to bash, so they don't care. And all their claims, old claims of, actually, this is about ethical, you know, journalism in video games, when there's an actual, the one time a year or two times a year, there's a question that is actually about that. Nope, nowhere to be found. And I looked for it. I was like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe they are actually upset. And they're like, oh, you should disclose. And this is not how you work in journalism. And no. So this is why you need journalists and the very important investigative job that they do. And then the people who are in a weird position react, and hopefully react a good way. And it takes time and it takes effort and some amount of controversy. And that's how we fix problems. So
right.
I think it's good. It's a positive thing in the end. And the fact that Riot ended up owning up to it is really good. All right. Sorry, I've been ranting a lot on this episode.
It's all good. Got to get your voice out there. I understand.
Yeah. Sometimes I do. All right. Well, that's going to be it for this episode. Next time, we're going to talk about Spider-Man. I hope it's going to be good. I really hope so.
Yeah.
It's going to be in 2 weeks. Until then, the all new, all different Ed is... is going to be on the 4Players network a little bit more, since you're in the city, right?
Yeah, so it's going to... I hope that I can be on more podcasts. I was on a podcast... well, it wasn't a podcast. It was like we did like a multiplayer game night a couple weeks ago, and I was on there. Like I mentioned, next week we'll be talking about all the different games that I played at PAX on the 4Player feed. On a 4Player Plus episode, so that'll be good. Tomorrow I'll be streaming Dragon Quest 11 at 4pp.tv. And awesome. As always, you can follow me on Twitter. So, and that my name will be in the show notes, since it's not the easiest thing to say and spell.
It will be. You just need to click on there. Perfect.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also find this show at FrenchSpin.com. If you speak French, I do this in French as well. You can listen to Le Rendez-vous Jeu or Le Rendez-vous Tech. And yeah, that's going to be it for this episode. We will be back in a couple of weeks with more daily news. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.